You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, did you know that pitchers and catchers report in 2 weeks?
No, geez, I better start packing. I think is what you're saying.
It's exciting.
I had heard it was coming up, so yes, I'm clicking off the days on the calendar.
All right, Greg. We got a little bit of news to talk about, but I want to start with a funny story first. So on Sunday, the BBWAA Awards for the New York chapter were held, and I was there, so I was having a couple fangirl moments. I was pretty close to the table where everyone was sitting: Aaron Judge, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, all those guys. But
nice, yeah.
I heard a story, Greg, about John Olerud, and he was talking about Ricky Henderson. And Greg, I was rolling on the floor. So now I need you to tell me your version of this story.
I'm guessing I know the story because it's funny. It was back when Ricky signed with the Mariners back in 2000, and Olerud was in his first year in Seattle as well, and they played together in New York the year before. And as the story goes, Danny, as I'm sure you heard, it was that Olerud was famous for wearing a batting helmet. He had a batting helmet that he wore in the field, one of the few players that wore a batting helmet. That was kind of his deal. He'd done it since college at Washington State University. He had a brain aneurysm, and one of the things they said is you need to wear this helmet, you know, the rest of your life, wherever you go, to protect your head. So the story went that Ricky Henderson got to Seattle and went up to the clubhouse and saw his batting helmet and said, why you got that batting helmet? And he said, well, I have to wear it because of this and that. And Henderson said, that's funny. I used to play with a guy in New York that had the same deal. And that was kind of the – Ricky was, you know, one of those guys that said weird stuff sometimes. And people actually believed that story, and it kind of became a deal. It was one of those, you know, actually a wives' tale that just spread and spread, and people retell it. But truth be told, and it was debunked pretty quickly back then, you know, Olerud always said that was a story that just wasn't true. That Ricky knew who he was. He wasn't that unaware of things, but it had become a tale that still gets told often. I think when the names come up, and I guess you heard it as well in New York this weekend. So still debunking that funny story back from the day.
I love it. I love that story. I think it's great. All right, Greg, listen, we have been yapping about D. Gordon all offseason, talking about his transition from fish to fisherman, from infield to outfield. David Adler for MLB.com wrote about how Gordon's speed skills on the base paths could equate to elite speed skills in the outfield, which is kind of mind-blowing to me. How does that work?
Yeah, I read that story. David did an excellent piece looking at the StatCast numbers on Gordon, and it all adds up to the same thing. We keep knowing that he's really fast, and it's hard to equate his numbers in the field to this point in his career because he played second base, he played shortstop before that. You can't really quantify numbers there as far as speed, but in the outfield, you certainly can see where that's beneficial. And David pointed out that the fastest guys in MLB last year with maximum sprint speed on the bases were all center fielders. Byron Buxton from the Twins and Billy Hamilton from the Reds, the guys that everybody thinks of, the really fast dudes in baseball. And Bradley Zimmer, the rookie from the Indians, was on that list as well. And D was the next guy. So by, you know, sprint speed, max sprint speed on the bases, he's clearly elite, and elite speedsters often play center field. So you can see why the Mariners are looking at D as a guy that can fit in out there. Speed in center, especially at Safeco Field, should translate very well. I mean, they had Jerod Dyson out there last year, also very fast, and that certainly played well. D is a guy who doesn't have as much experience in the outfield, obviously, but he's the guy that's going to go get it and cover those gaps. So it's going to be pretty fun to see him. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to see it in spring here in a couple of weeks and get him running out there. He's been working every day, Danny, already, and he was up in Seattle here last week. Met with some of the media here and talked about it, and he's just pumped up and ready to go and see what he can do. He's taking that challenge to heart, and he's out there every day working on stuff at the wall, working on his footwork, and I thought it was really, really interesting. He said all the things that he's trying to adjust to have come pretty easily. The one thing he's had a hard time with, he says, ironically, is just the throw, the crow hop throw that an outfielder has to make after years of just, you know, taking the ball and firing as an infielder. Yeah. Does just the foot shuffle. You got to do the crow hop and get the big throw. And he says he's kind of working his way through that. But the fact that that's the one thing that's on his list, and he feels pretty comfortable everywhere else. And pretty good sign if they haven't even gotten to spring training yet.
All right, Dee, if you're listening, I was an expert crow hopper in high school, my friend. So give me a call, give you a couple tips, you'll be good to go. But, man, if Mariners fans weren't already excited, I would say that after reading something like that, and the cool thing, too, is David Adler did a really great job of making it conversational. So you don't have to know every little thing about StatCast and speed. You just need to know that Dee Gordon is fast, and he's going to be an amazing center fielder. All right, Greg, Ryan Healy, he's gearing up for the season as well. He's ready to tackle first base and be the guy that Seattle needs to play the position, not every other day, every single day. So what kind of flexibility does an everyday first baseman give the Mariners?
Yeah, if that's the way they go, and I do think they want to do that, Danny, it gives them an extra spot. I mean, if you don't have to have two platoon at first base, it gives you an extra spot to use, and they will use that for sure, and to carry an extra bullpen arm, and that's huge. I mean, if you can go with eight relievers, it just gives you a lot more flexibility, keeps guys fresh longer. You know, you got more options when you go match up. You don't have to pitch guys back-to-back days necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to go with eight arms in the pen, and they would certainly like to do that. And if Healy can play every day, and that certainly seems like their goal going in, and he's done it before. He did last year with the A's. That does give him that flexibility. And last year they had Danny Valencia, and they wanted to get Ryan Vogelbach, or Danny Vogelbach, excuse me, to be the alternate with him, and they ended up bringing in Yonder Alonso at the end of the year. So they went with the platoon all year there. And then the year before was Deho Lee, if everybody remembers Big Deho, and Adam Lynn doing the platoon there. So the last few years they've used up an extra roster spot there. So he leaves the guy, then you can just use your utility guy that can fit in there. And Andrew Romine or Taylor Motter both have a little bit of experience at first, can play in a pinch. So you can get away with that and use that first base spot to bolster your bullpen.
I like it, Greg. I like it a lot. You know what else I like? I like MLB Pipeline. Our guys, Jonathan Mayo, Jim Callis, Mike Rosenbaum, retooling their top 100, working tirelessly to get that list up. And Seattle is hanging their hat on Kyle Lewis, not a bad guy to do it on. And we talked about him a little bit earlier this offseason, Greg, but it's time to circle back to this guy. He says he's feeling good, he's ready, but ultimately the goal is not to make his debut this year. He's not there, but the goal is to have a full, healthy, and improved season, right?
Yeah, there's no question. And every scout, every baseball person I've talked to in the organization, that this guy is clearly the best athlete they've got in the minor league system. They love his potential. When he walks out on the field, he's the best player. He's the best player out there. He just has that knee that he banged up, more than banged up, when right after he got drafted. He played a month in Everett and then got in a collision at home plate with a catcher and just tore that right knee up, major surgery, and it took him a year to get back out on the field, and even then last year was still kind of coming back at the end of the year. So they're not pushing Kyle. They're just going, look, this year you're going to get healthy, you're going to play a full season. We're not worried about rushing you up anywhere. Just get out there, you know, get yourself comfortable, and the talent will take over. And he's fully on board with that. They're not bringing him to major league camp. You know, he's one of the guys that'll come in a couple weeks later in the minor league group, and just, you know, get to work. They can give him that time to just keep building that knee and not do anything crazy with it right off the bat. And you know, I look forward to seeing him play. I wouldn't be surprised, even though he's not a big league camp, a lot of times they'll bring those minor leaguers, a couple of them over, have him play in a Cactus League game. He'll be there for, you know, pinch hitting late or running or doing some stuff in the late innings when the big guys are going back to the clubhouse and getting an early break. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him over there, maybe get some at-bats and get a chance to see him in Cactus League. Would be fun to see. So far, all I've seen of Kyle is him working out in the field and working that knee and pulling sleds and rehabbing. So it'll be real good to see him in a uniform, because he is an exciting part of the future, there's no doubt. And player of the year in college baseball coming out of Mercer University, all the talent in the world, and a guy that could really fit in. They'd be playing center field probably in either Clinton or Double A Arkansas this year to start out. And just give him that time, and you know, I would guess, you know, maybe next year you see him in Tacoma and knocking on the door, getting into Seattle. So that's kind of the long term plan. But yeah, Kyle Lewis, definitely a guy to keep an eye on down the road.
All right, it sounds like patience is the key word for Mariners fans and the team this year. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. Be patient, everybody, because it's going to pay off for sure. Greg, I am so appreciative of your time every week. Thank you so much.
Always good, Danny. We got one more week, and then we start doing these from Peoria, Arizona, I would think.
Oh, man, it's going to be a great time. I can't wait. Hopefully, the next time we talk, well, in 2 weeks, maybe there'll be some, like, chirping noises or some balls and bats, the crack of the bat, all that good stuff, Greg, will be mixed into the podcast so people can kind of get the real feel for what you're doing out there. I would love that.
It was 80 degrees in Peoria yesterday, so I know sitting here in rainy Seattle, that sounds pretty good. So I'm sure there'll be some fans coming down as well to kind of enjoy that sun down in Arizona.
All right. If you guys still need your Mariners fix, Mariners.com, that's the place to go to get all that information. With Greg Johns, I'm Danny Wexelman. Thank you guys so much for tuning in.